Good evening, it's August 27th, 5:15. In the evening, we're in the Tom Baker Room of the City County Building. This will be a Board of City Commissioners meeting and also a Board of Health meeting. Health will precede the City Commission meeting. I do not see a chaplain in the room, so we'll just start with the Pledge of Allegiance. To order, we can call roll.
Commissioner Rich?
Here.
Commissioner Zenker?
Here.
Commissioner Conley?
Here.
Commissioner Cleary?
Here.
Mayor Schmidt?
Here. Renee, it's your podium.
It's my show, huh? Thank you. I do have some slides to share. Perfect. This will be our agenda for tonight. I have some topics to review with you relating to our community health needs assessment, some identified priorities, a housing and homeless forum, and then provide some homelessness updates, statistics, and then I have someone here, Deputy Chief Stuhlmeyer here from the Police Department, as well to talk about impacts to the Bismarck Police Department and looking at a potential solution. So I'll get started with our community health needs assessment. We have done this every 3 years. For those of you that may be new to the table, it's a partnership between Bismarck Early Public Health, Western Plains Public Health, and the local hospitals. We do a stakeholder survey, and that is sent out to the community stakeholders and the general public. We have secondary data from the county health rankings and other community statistics and feedback, and then a stakeholder meeting identifying the health needs, and then finally the implementation plan to develop and address those needs. And that's currently where we are at in the process, is we've been through all of the prior squares, and we're looking at what we need to put in our implementation plan to address the needs that were identified. We had the survey open from October through December of 2023. It was available online. Stakeholders from the community, our partners, and the general public included it. And then we also did extra efforts to reach underserved populations and homeless populations to be able to get their feedback as well. Bismarck Early Public Health did some additional surveys with those individuals. We had a total of 1,118 responses submitted, and that was up from the last time we did our assessment, which was 933 last time in 2021. And then you can see our top needs that were identified in 2024. Number one this year was affordable housing. That was our most prevalent need. It was in our survey needs last time, but certainly came out as the top need this time around, followed by mental health, public transportation, quality child care, long-term senior care, access to health care providers, and then access to affordable health care. Our stakeholders meeting was held on June 10th, and that was at the Dream Center in Bismarck. We had approximately 70 stakeholders gathered to review the survey results and then participate and facilitate a discussion on the needs that were identified. The stakeholders then prioritized those needs, ranking in order of importance to be addressed. And the number one priority that our stakeholders put forward was mental and behavioral health, followed by affordable, safe, accessible housing, access to affordable and quality health care, quality child care, access to public transportation, a 24/7 low barrier shelter, long-term senior care, social and medical detox services, healthy aging and healthy living, access to specialty health care, and then residential support services. I'm pointing out in the red arrows there, mental and behavioral health and access to affordable and quality health care were core needs that our team, we met after the stakeholders meeting took place, representatives from CHI, Sanford, Bismarck Early Public Health in Western Plains, to talk about what areas can we collaborate on and work together in the community. And the two areas that we agreed we could have the biggest impact on would be mental behavioral health and then access to affordable and quality health care. Affordable and safe, accessible housing is obviously a concern, not necessarily one that healthcare providers like us could have a major impact on, but we are certainly willing to be a passenger in the ride. Whoever decides to take the lead on the housing piece of it. But we will focus on those other two issues as a core group. Also mentioning our Housing and Homeless Forum, we co-hosted this meeting with the Community Development Department. That was held on June 19th at the Dream Center in Bismarck. We had approximately 60 stakeholders that participated in this meeting and really focused in on affordable housing and homelessness. And the ideas collected from that forum will be used to form a needs assessment and be included in the 2025 to 29 consolidated plan that the Community Development Department puts together. We also have them do some rankings as far as what they felt was most important around housing and homelessness. Number one came out as a low barrier, 24/7 emergency access to shelter, followed by overall lack of affordable housing stock, lack of emergency support for individuals with addiction and mental health issues, lack of housing for individuals with criminal history, unsafe and uninhabitable living conditions of rental properties, lack of affordable transportation options, inequitable housing rental policies, lack of public awareness regarding affordable housing needs, lack of staffing for service providers, lack of affordable accessible housing for individuals with disabilities, and lack of flexible rental application procedures, and then followed lastly by the lack of education for landlords. So some common priorities between the Community Health Needs Assessment and the Housing and Homeless Stakeholders Group were these four issues that really came out, and that was the lack of affordable housing, lack of transportation, no 24/7 low barrier emergency shelter, and then lack of emergency support services for individuals with addiction and mental health issues. So those came through in both stakeholder groups as priorities. I'm gonna go now into homelessness next, but I want to maybe pause here and offer any opportunity if you have questions on our needs assessment or the housing forum before I do that. Then I will go into the homelessness update. I wanted to talk briefly about the unsheltered point in time count. Every year the HUD requires an annual count of individuals experiencing homelessness, and that's on a single night in January. In 2023, North Dakota started an additional summer point in time count. So we can see what the numbers and the statistics look like during the summer versus during winter, since we have such harsh winters here. The counts are coordinated by region. You can see on the map there that we are part of Region 7. Of course, most of the resources are in Bismarck and Burley County and Morton County, secondly. So we try to coordinate counts between those two main counties. And those were the areas that we were able to address. Bismarck-Burley Public Health did serve as the lead for the Region 7 PIC count for both the one in January and the one in July. So just some statistics from those point in time counts. The volunteers gathered at Ministry on the Margins. We split out into groups and we went to cover areas in both Bismarck and Mandan. We did the summer count on the night of July 10th. And just looking at that, 77 total surveys were completed in the summer point in time count, 65 of those in Bismarck and 12 in Mandan. If you look at the unsheltered numbers in January, we had in 2024 63 total surveys that were completed. And then in July, it was up some, up to 77, but not as drastic, of an increase as we had last year, versus 28 and then 52 during the summertime. So still an increase though. I also captured some information from HMIS, which is the Homeless Management Information System, and the service providers in the area that serve homeless individuals are putting data into the HMIS system, and that's where we're able to get reports and statistics and information. So just an overall comparison, the orange line there is North Dakota chronic homeless number of individuals, and then the blue line is Region 7, which would be the region that we are in. You can see we've had a steady increase from 2018 of 54 all the way up now to 2023. That's the most recently completed data they had available at 220. The state of North Dakota obviously is seeing similar increases. I was able to get numbers back from 2020 for the state numbers, but we are certainly following trend as the state is as well. Also wanted to show some information about the number of individuals in emergency shelter. For Region 7, the emergency shelters that we would have here would be the Abused Adult Resource Centers, Domestic Violence Shelter, Youth Works has an emergency youth shelter, the Missouri Slope Area United Way has their emergency shelter, and then there's also some beds in Mercer County, and that's the Women's Action and Resource Center. So these would be numbers entered in those facilities from 2018 to 2023. There was a dip in 22, I wasn't sure exactly, or they couldn't give me a reason as to why that was. But still, you can kind of see that what the range is as far as the number of people needing emergency shelter. I also wanted to talk briefly about the access points in the community. So if you're homeless, you must start at one of these access points and get basically registered or assessed to see what services you need and what we can connect you with. The top portion is for someone that is in need of emergency shelter, and the bottom section is for the individuals in need of food, rent, utilities, or other basic needs. So when you're looking for shelter or a place to stay, the options then for you would be Abused Adult Resource Center if you're a victim of domestic violence, sexual assault, or human trafficking, an unaccompanied minor, you would go to Youth Works. Men and women, individuals without children, are taken in at United Way. They are what's considered a high barrier shelter, so they're doing drug testing at night. And so they're screening out individuals that may be under the influence. And then that leaves us the option of Ministry on the Margins, who's had a pilot project in place with the coffee house. It's not a shelter. They're not entering information necessarily into HMIS because they are not considered a shelter with beds, but they are a safe place for individuals to be out of the elements, and they are kind of filling our gap in that aspect of things. But certainly that gap is there. They're not open 24/7, and there's no access 24/7, 365, basically, for those that have a crisis or behavioral health condition. When you look at the levels of individuals that we're talking about when it comes to behavioral health and addiction, there are levels of support that individuals need based on what they are experiencing in their lifetime, at their point in time. If they're stable, they could still need resources. They could be functioning at home, school, and work, but maybe don't have enough money to get food for themselves or for their families. So they would be accessing resources like the food pantries, for example. Then you can go down to the next level. That would be, they would have a history of behavioral health and addiction issues, and they maybe are interested in making some changes, so would be potentially open to being enrolled in some sort of treatment program or trying to follow rules to adhere to when it comes to the level of support services. Do they need to go to addiction treatment? What kind of support services do they need and are able and willing to try something at that point? So that would be that middle level. And you can see on the right all of the community partners that are providing services in our community right now for those individuals, especially that are going through a hard time and ready to do something to get help and to make a change. The last level is the level of crisis, and this is the level that really we're seeing a lot of issues with. These individuals have active, chronic, severe mental and behavioral health and addiction issues. They're really just trying to survive day to day. They are not able to meet their basic needs. they're not stable, they're not ready for change, they may be actively experiencing mental illness or addiction and really not able to take care of themselves. They're just trying to get through each day and survive each day. The individuals at this level are impacted a lot. A lot of our entities such as law enforcement, our emergency rooms, hospitals, emergency responders, and local businesses. I know the police department will be speaking a little bit briefly about the experiences that they've had with businesses reaching out to them for help with individuals that would be considered individuals in crisis at this tier. So you can see the support and the resources off to the right. We have West Central, a crisis unit. It's not a shelter, but they are actually contracting, and I'll go a little bit more in detail about what that actually entails in another slide, but Dakota Foundation has a crisis response unit for behavioral health. Ministry on the Margins is doing the coffee house, not a shelter, but it's open 10 p.m. Until 6 a.m. summer hours. And then the Mosaic Triage Center, Tricia Brown is a nurse practitioner, and she is looking at doing medical detox. That's in the planning stages right now, but it's not operational at this point. So limited resources, but high needs. So alternative care services, it's ACS, and that's what I was talking to you about, West Central contracts with Dakota Foundation. It's a crisis residential model, and they were originally established as an alternative to hospitalizations for persons with mental illness. And then they expanded into helping dual diagnosed individuals. So they might have substance abuse and mental health issues. And then they opened up beds for their detox facility. And that was opened prior just to West Central clients. But in 2020, they opened that up. So if someone came in, presented from the community, or if law enforcement had someone that was in need of detox services, they were able to have a bed at that facility as well. So you can see the number of clients that they have served has drastically increased from 2019 and 2020. That's when the detox would have been opened up to others outside of West Central clients to where they are now with 2023 to 24 at 469. This slide will show you the types of individuals that they are seeing and the number of days that they are spending in the facility. The blue line at the top is substance use disorder. So if someone is coming in with substance use disorder, this is the number of days that they would have spent at their facility. And you can see the increase over the years as far as the number of days that people have had to spend there. We've got the orange line, which is mental illness. And then we have the green line at the bottom, and that is someone that would be there for mental illness and substance use disorder. I wanted to show you this slide because in 2020, this is what I had mentioned, when they opened up their social detox beds to clients outside of the West Central clients, they had a drastic increase. Obviously, you'll see that orange line spike up, but our police department and the number of calls that they had taking people to jail did decrease following that. And so you can see just that simple, that change really had an impact on law enforcement. It's a minor change and had some impact, but we're still seeing the needs. This is just related to detox itself and not other welfare checks. I do have a slide here about the local hospitals and what they are seeing. So their impacts, they were able to provide me with some statistics. These numbers reflect emergencies by primary diagnosis at the local emergency rooms. And this is a combined number between Sanford and CHI. The blue line at the bottom is primary diagnosis of drugs. The drugs include meth, opioids, cannabis, and cocaine. Highest number of overdoses was meth, and it kind of goes in that order. So meth, opioids, cannabis, cocaine. But I included them all in the same line there. And then the second orange line is alcohol. And you can see we've had steady increase too as far as the needs go for emergency rooms and the impacts on emergency rooms for alcohol intoxication. This slide is the Bismarck Police Department and the welfare checks that they have been doing and the number of calls that they're going out on. So I will have Deputy Chief Stubblemeyer speak to this slide and provide information.
I'm Deputy Chief Jason Stubblemeyer, Field Services Commander for the Field Services Division. Chief Dravich is gone today. He's on a well-needed vacation. So here I am, and they asked me to make a few comments about the challenges we're having as far as the police department goes. And I was gonna break this up into two different challenges, and one is detox. And you've seen on the previous, if I could scroll this up here. Okay, this one, you can see that we did get some relief, and this is really some really good relief to us because detox is very manpower intensive, and I'll explain that in a minute. But I just wanted to overall, what is detox? So detox, it's not illegal to be out and drunk public. So it's not a criminal offense. There's a state law that prohibits that from being a criminal offense. However, we have the ability per state law to take somebody to their home, local hospital, detox center, or whenever that individual constitutes a danger to individuals or themselves, we can take them to jail. Well, we've had no other facility to take them. So historically, we take them to jail, and that's for their safety. Obviously, we're obligated to try to contact a family member. So typically, the folks we deal with in this, they have no family members, no friends that are willing to take care of them. We end up clearing them at the hospital and then taking them to jail, and they're there for approximately 8 hours or until they sober up, and then they're released from custody. So where the manpower issues come in is we have to get them cleared by jail, by the hospitals, which is a departure from it was before, but the state legislature put that on the jails, that we need some medical clearance because we had folks dying in the jails because they weren't clear. So it kind of made sense. However, that adds about anywhere from 40 minutes to an hour and a half at the hospital. And that means at least one officer, but usually two officers that are dealing with that situation. And that's just at the hospital. So we're looking at minimum 2 hours, two officers tied up, dealing with one detox. And as you can see, we had, back in 2015, we had 450 of them, which was quite a bit. So we did get some relief. Part of that, I would say, is the services that are being provided by some of the folks in this room. Some of it was the jail shut down during COVID, and I think the tolerance from the officers, we had to make a shift. We just couldn't care for others like we wanted to in the past. Typically, detox is full by noon on Friday. So we deal a lot with that. The hospitals, I look at it as a medical condition. Unfortunately, the ERs are full of other medical conditions, and they do what they can do to get them treated and get out. Officers like to deal with the problems once. They don't like to deal with problems multiple times, and that's what happens. When we take them to the hospital, sometimes before the officer gets in their car and get ready to take off, they're walking back out of the ER, and usually, population I'm talking about we deal with again that night. So that was kind of where you've seen the numbers. So that is some relief. As far as the homeless challenge, I think everybody's seen that we've had an explosion in that, and that certainly has affected our operations. Going back to this screen in 2019, and these ain't all related to the homeless population, but it kind of correlates with the other data. We had a 42% increase from 2019 to 2023 in welfare checks. It seemed to have leveled off there a little bit. And then 2024, I guess we can ignore that. We don't know what that's gonna be yet, but it's a significant impact. You know, if we are sitting here in five more years and we have another 42% increase, that's gonna be tough to deal with without increasing our staff. And as you know, it's hard for us to do right now to keep manpower stabilized. And so we're trying to be most efficient as we can with the resources we have. And that's why we like to solve the problem. So Renee asked me before I came up here, am I supportive of a triage center? I am. I think it's needed. I think it needs to be well thought out and well planned and have a bunch of groups together talking about it. Thank God for Sister Kathleen. She has the coffee shop. There are challenges there. I checked the data of our response to there and just the building. We had 119 calls there since June 1st. That is a lot of calls to one address, and that's not including the surrounding area. What she's doing is providing a good service, but there's no surrounding support for that service. So when you bring a bunch of folks that have addiction issues and mental health issues and there's no other service, that's what you're gonna have. You're gonna have a bunch of police responses to that incident. I've seen some of the videos of what our officers have to deal with, and it's not very good. It's not something that should be acceptable in the city of Bismarck. So you'll probably hear about this maybe in the future, but we proposed an ordinance from the police department, worked with the city attorney on maybe some short-term things that we can do to help resolve some of the situation. So hopefully that's gonna get discussed in the future. And then of course, what Renee's doing is some long-term planning that I think is needed if it's done correctly. Any questions from me or?
Commissioner Conley.
The police chief was nice enough a couple years ago. He actually allowed me 4 ride alongs on all of your shifts, 44 hours and things. And especially at night, it's not only the detox, but there's several times to where somebody's, like you said, it's perfectly legal to be inebriated in public. So it's usually 2 officers there, and they wake them up, they get them to where they can walk again and send them on their way. And then they were getting a revisit to calls, and everything in the queue might have been 18 at the original time, but later in the night, now you're looking at 30 and they're going back to another stop. So there's that dynamic as well, but it's taking the same amount of police officers off, just general helping of the community. Just wanted to have that.
Commissioner Conley, absolutely. That's exactly what I'm trying to explain, that if we need the jail thing is okay because they're safe. And we know they're safe, and we're probably not gonna get any more calls on them, at least for 8 hours. So that was a good stopgap. However, that's manpower intensive too, and very labor intensive. And that's the problem. We need to have some sort of service that prevents us from going back and back, because our community, I don't think, is really acceptance of seeing somebody passed out on a boulevard and just kind of wave and go by. They call because they care, and that's good, and we will respond. We just like to take care of and solve the problem right away, so we don't have to repeat ourselves. And our commissioner is going on a ride along tonight, I hear.
Full moon.
So you might. Any other questions?
Commissioner Cleary.
And it's not
not as much a question, Jason, but just I know you and I have had a lot of conversations with Renee about this. We've sat in a lot of groups, and I think that there is a lot of positive stuff coming from those discussions. I think you're right when you talk about some of this, it really takes a group effort, because a short-term solution, and that's why I think we really need to take a good look at some of these ordinances before we try to stick something in place that just makes it more challenging to be homeless but doesn't give us a solution. I think that some of these bigger groups, the dynamics between the hospitals and the police and the services that are already there, and having those group discussions is gonna be really important, because I think we need to find a way to mesh our like short-term plans that really you guys need, because you need support, but how do we get to those long-term plans where we're helping people out of homelessness and not just like shifting them around. So I appreciate the conversations. I think you guys are doing a lot. You're really playing your part in them, because I think we need your guys' voice as well as the hospitals, and just so that collaboration is so necessary, and it is happening, and we just need more of it. I think steps are taken every time it happens. So I just appreciate the work.
Absolutely, thanks.
Thank you, Debbie.
I would like to present a potential solution and something that we could potentially look at and be involved at in the community. As I had stated, and Jason had stated, individuals in crisis with addiction, active mental health conditions really do have the fewest resources, but certainly do have the largest impact on everyone in the community. And we're looking at potential solution of a community triage center, and that offers care at one location. It's an intermediate level of care where individuals could be triaged if they are in crisis, whether it be a behavioral health crisis and someone's having a mental illness, if it's addiction and someone is suffering from alcohol intoxication or a drug overdose and that type of thing, they could be assessed and determine what level of care they would need, rather than bogging down the resources of the ERs and our law enforcement officers. So I've done some research about a community triage center, and this started back in 2018 originally. When we were working through our Gold Star Behavioral Task Force, and now it's Burley Morton Behavioral Health Coalition, these issues have not gone away. They've actually probably increased as far as the needs go in the community. But the answer that we don't want to have is to send individuals to jail and have them go multiple times and have our officers respond multiple times. So that can be ineffective. It's the same high individuals that are high utilizers of the systems, and that can contain a huge cost to the community. Triage centers can be set up to meet needs of each community and what they do in each community, but they really do exist to serve as a single location where first responders could bring an individual in crisis, and they could be assessed and triaged and helped at that one facility. They're better equipped to respond. They have individuals that might be trained in mental health response, crisis intervention training, dealing with people with addiction versus just going to jail and being incarcerated. And then the conditions there, as you know, in jails can often exacerbate someone. If someone has PTSD or trauma that they've experienced and now they are in jail in a setting that might be threatening to them, that can further exacerbate some of the issues they're experiencing. So my request tonight for you as City Commission, I know this is Board of Health and a Board of Health update, but would be to ask you permission to take the lead as a City of Bismarck to move forward with a sustainable solution addressing the gaps and the needs that we've identified tonight. We've researched community triage centers. There are several that have models in place that we could potentially follow. Sioux Falls, Rapid City, those are close enough to us, and it have been a public and possibilities as far as what this could look like for the City of Bismarck. And just I listed some of the individuals that first come to mind, would be the police department, obviously public health, the Burley Morton Detention Center, the local hospitals. I think that would be a great core group to start with, to have high-level conversations. I know that there's other partners in the community that are serving homeless individuals, and I think there would be a point to bring those individuals in, but to have conversations at a higher level at this point and just talk about some of the concerns and get conversations going is what my next steps would be.
Commissioners. So one question I have is, I think we have the issue on both sides of the river, so my thoughts would be that we should at least engage or offer to engage individuals from Mandan and Morton County law enforcement at a minimum, because they're also dealing with the same issues, I have to believe, and those individuals are probably ending up in our two facilities here, or three facilities here, and so it might be good if they were part of that group as we look for solutions too. Other thoughts, commissioners?
Yes, sir.
Commissioner.
So this triage center would be a building staff with professionals with beds and whatever resources you need to take care of these people that are struggling?
Correct. And it could be like the, just some dream plans that we've kind of looked at as far as addressing the needs that we would have. They could take into consideration medical detox. So Mosaic, Trisha Brown, she could bring that to the table. We have the ACS, the Crisis Response Unit. Dakota Foundation is doing that. Could we bring them to the table? And then a low barrier shelter would be the final piece. And they could go either up or down as far as levels of care, but they would be a centrally located facility where law enforcement could bring them there and move on with the next call that they get, because they have trained individuals at this facility that could assist and take the individual from there. So that's the concept.
Renee, do you have it in your current staffing capacity to coordinate and facilitate this?
Current staffing for conversations?
Yes.
Yes. In the
to take the, and coordinate the stakeholder group to work towards development of a solution. Not funding the solution.
Sure. Yes, Mayor, I would be willing to take the lead on it just because it's such an important thing. It's an important thing to me. I see the impacts on the clients that we serve and the individuals that we've gone out, we've done our point in time counts. We've worked with Ministry on the Margins and the shelters in town to see the needs by the services, the health services that we're bringing to them. High needs, no place to go, no resources. Like, we need to do something, and I'm passionate enough about this. I will make time to lead the effort. I just feel like we need to do something to give these people a chance at success. And with our shelter situation, individuals that have nowhere else to go, and we have winter coming up, it just makes me think that we have to start talking about it sooner than later. So,
commissioners, what are your wishes? Commissioner Rich.
I move that we give Renee the ball and let her run with it, see where it goes.
Second.
Discussion. Commissioner Conley.
I know we always have this conversation about quorum and things, but my education and background is in this area too. And granted, it's a little dated because I haven't worked close to it. It's more elder care now. But if there's a way that we can manage the open meeting rules and stuff and be part of those conversations, because might be able to bring something to the table with it.
Go ahead, Commissioner Cleary.
And I mean, I think it's one of those things where if I'm needed at a meeting and Commissioner Connolly also wants to be there, or Commissioner Rich wants to be there with the police, like, I don't think that there would be a problem with them being some version of an open public meeting to it as needed. But I do think it would be, to the mayor's point, valuable to keep the group small, some of the meetings that I've been at with you in the past, where we're trying to engage with law enforcement, but also the business community and, or the schools or the hospitals, and we're kind of bringing them all together at once, the services that are, you know, already actively helping the unhoused, I think it can become too many cooks really quick. So I think keeping that group small, where it is just law enforcement and public health from both sides of the river, as well as the detention center and the hospitals, and then kind of cap it at that. And then if you, for individual meetings, need to bring in, you know, service workers or business, you know, buy-in, that kind of stuff, I think that that can come and go, and you keep the core group smaller, because I think that that's probably how we are the most effective. That would be my take on it.
The other option too could be our combined, I know that's only Burley and Bismarck, but our combined commissions group would be a public meeting for discussion.
If we wanted to have that as a, as an opportunity to share information and certainly make the public more aware of it, that might be an opportunity for some educational times for it, but I'm not opposed to that at all.
And by no means do I need to be at every meeting. So if it's better scenario for all five of us to hear how those meetings are developing, and you would rather report to us after them versus me just attending, we can talk about that too. I mean, yeah. I think it's more important that we get it started, and we can figure out how we want that to work as far as portfolio or
And when I bring full it, updates. I mean, I could start the conversation, and when there's something that I need your guys' input or feel like I have enough information to share, I could certainly bring it back.
I think that's a good plan.
Okay.
Any other discussion? Yes.
Just Jason. If I may, just to clarify Commissioner Risch's motion, to give Renee the ball and let her run with it. We appreciate that. But for the minutes,
maybe have to be a little more
can it be, is there consensus that if we can reflect on the bullets that are on the screen? Next steps would be to form a community stakeholder group involving representation from City of Bismarck, public health, law enforcement.
You'd just be form a
just
public
the stakeholder group? Is that
regarding the community triage center concept?
Is that amenable to the group, the table? Is that what you were referring to when you said give Renee the ball and let her run?
That's exactly what I meant.
That's what I thought, that's what my notes reflected. We just want to make sure the minutes captured accurately. Thank you.
I could do a lot of things with the ball, probably.
All right. There being no further discussion, we'll call roll.
Commissioner Zenker?
Yes.
Commissioner Conley?
Yes.
Commissioner Cleary?
Yes.
Commissioner Risch?
Yes.
Mayor Schmidt?
Yes. Renee, do you have anything else for us with your report?
I do not, so thank you. Thank you very much for your time.
All right, thank you. I think I got the structure right.
Commissioner Risch?
Here.
Commissioner Zenker?
Here.
Commissioner Conley?
Here.
Commissioner Cleary?
Here.
Mayor Schmidt?
Here. At this point in time, we have public comment. Public comment is restricted to the item on the consent agenda or a regular agenda item that is not a public hearing. Anyone who wishes to speak to a topic, please come forward, state your name, sign in, and tell us what you're speaking to us about.
Schmitz and commissioners, my name is Dan Nagel, and I'm here today on behalf of the Bismarck Manufactured Home Park, which is a mobile home community here located in Bismarck, North Dakota. It's the community behind the municipal baseball field next to Kiwanis Park. We have put together packets for each of you, if I may approach.
Sure.
Just for the commission's information, the park has 88 lots. Here today also is the operations officer, John Squirtino, as well as one of my partners, Todd Cranda. He was instrumental in the implementation of the tenants' rights legislation that was passed in the last couple legislative sessions. In short, we're asking that the commission approve an agreement between the city and the park that allows the tenants to be charged for their individual water usage. Pursuant to the Bismarck Municipal Ordinance, it does need to be adopted by the commission to allow that to happen, and it would be just strictly passing along the cost of the water that each of the tenants of the community use. As part of that, we're indicating that the park will not increase the rents for a period of 24 months from when the last increase was, and that was in February of 2024, that we would be providing a 90-day notice to all of the tenants that this will be forthcoming as far as them being charged monthly for the water that they actually use. This would allow the tenants ample time to be able to see what their water usage is and limit if they choose to their consumption. The park would also be willing to waive the $3 surcharge that the state legislature has authorized communities to charge, so we would agree to waive that. At the macro level, the city, I know, has spent a great deal of time over the last several years to come up with a fair and equitable way to pass along the water bills to our citizens. And I'll note that I don't believe in any of the discussions for that was it ever brought up that we just prorate it and every single family, single family home pays the same dollar amount across the board, no matter how much water that you actually use. And we're just asking that the commission allow the exact same thing to happen in the park as all of the single family homes in the city also follow, that they be charged for what they actually use. The majority of the park's tenants, as you'll see in the packet that I provided to you, their water bills would be in the range of $18 to the low 20s. The vast majority are in that typical range, but there are some folks in the park that are using an excessive amount, I would say, where their bills are over $100 per month. And we don't believe that it's equitable that what essentially is going to happen or is happening is that the people that are using less water are subsidizing the folks that are using an excessive amount of water. In the packet, we have included copies of the leases that the residents currently have. And I'll note that in the lease that the tenants are already obligated to pay for their individual water rates. That has not happened because it has not been ratified at this point by the city commission. But we are asking that that do take place. This for the park will not, it's not a source of profit. This is simply passing through to the tenants the water that they are actually using. The park, the current owners acquired the park approximately 4 years ago. They spent approximately $30,000 to install state-of-the-art meters. Metron is the name of the company. M-E-T-R-O-N, if any of you would like to check out what their products are. These are state-of-the-art meters that allow tenants real-time data to see what water they're using, the number of gallons, and it can indicate what the dollar amount would be. So they can look online. There is an app so they can track these dollar amounts. Essentially, there's two options that are going to be taking place here. The first is that the commission ratifies this agreement. There's the 90-day time period. Let folks adjust their water usage if they want to. As you can see in the third exhibit, the majority of the tenants are using a reasonable amount of water, but there are those that are using frankly, looks like an incredible amount of water. So it would allow them, if there are leaky toilets, faucets, and so forth, that they can have plenty of time to adjust their consumption so they're not paying $140 a month for their water usage. So that's one option. The city ratifies an agreement, and that allows us to pass along those costs. The other option, which would happen, is the rents will be increased, and then it's going to be pro rata. And so the folks that are conscientious about their water usages, those people are going to be subsidizing these other folks. We don't believe that the board denying this request would be protecting your constituents. It actually would be passing along and doing contrary to what every other single home owner in the city happens. If you want a nice green yard and use a lot of water, fantastic, you pay for it. If you want to be more conservative, then your bill is a lot less. It doesn't seem equitable in this situation to allow bad actors, so to speak, that use a ton of water to be subsidized by other folks in the community. So what we're requesting, Mayor and Commissioners, is that the city adopt an agreement, and we have included in the packet, the last document was a sample water service agreement that was put together back in 2023 when this whole process started. And in that, we would be willing to include 24 months with no rental increases from the last increase, which was in February of 2024. And I will note that a rental increase that would be forthcoming would be more than the increase in than their water bill would be for the vast majority of the tenants. We would agree to waive the $3 surcharge, which is authorized by the state of North Dakota, and waive the tenants' rights legislation that's recently been passed. And we would agree to give 90 days notice, and during that time period, provide all of the tenants with the information to show what their bills are, so it gives them ample time if they wish to make any adjustments in their consumption to lower that bill, just like all single home or single residences in the city of Bismarck would be doing. If the commission has any questions for me, or I know John sitting over there in the black shirt would be more than happy to answer any questions or concerns that you may have about our proposal.
Commissioner Risch. Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, Dan. So initially, they're going to be paying more, $24 more a month, which is currently included in the lot, correct?
Correct. In the lot rent agreement, there is a specific provision that does indicate it's on page 2 of the lease under utilities. Each tenant will be responsible for paying for water, yada, yada, yada. So yes, once that kicks in, they'll be paying a small dollar amount more than what they're currently paying, but there will be no increases for a period of 24 months, and that wouldn't start for 3 months. The 90 days to allow them plenty of time to know that the water bills will be forthcoming.
I guess the only thing is, that's an increase right out of the chute. Right off the bat, they'll be paying more per month. They'll pay their lot rent plus the $24, correct?
Correct, Commissioner, which after that 90-day time period, correct. Well, I shouldn't say their rent would be the same, but then they would be paying the utility that they're already contractually obligated to under the contract, but that just hasn't been being charged due to our ordinance.
Commissioner Conley?
I don't have a question, but I'm going to wait to comment on this when the item comes up, and that I know the history and the last time that we were approached and things, and I'll address it during that time. I'm not going to respond to it during public comment.
Anyone else have questions right now? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And this is public comment period. Anyone wish to speak, please come forward. A second call for public comment. A third and final call for public comment. Hearing and seeing no further public comment, public comment period is now closed. Commissioners, what are your wishes with regard to the consent agenda?
Move to approve.
Second.
Do we have any discussion? Hearing none, we'll call roll.
Commissioner Zinker?
Yes.
Commissioner Conley?
Yes.
Commissioner Cleary?
Yes.
Commissioner Risch?
Yes.
Mayor Schmidt?
Yes. Okay, moving to the regular agenda. First item is a public hearing on Ordinance 6588, the zoning map amendment from A Agricultural and RR Residential Zoning District to A Agricultural Zoning District lot and auditor's lot 3, S3 in section 25. Go ahead, Ben.
Sure, thanks, Mayor. Just waiting for the PowerPoint to engage here. What? Maybe I just get to look at the blue screen of, not quite death, but the blue screen here.
The applicants Lonnie and Deanne Barth are requesting a zoning map amendment from Auditor's Lot S3, Section 25138 North, Township 138 North, Range 81 West, Hay Creek Township, from the A Agricultural and RR Residential Zoning Districts to the A Agricultural Zoning District as outlined in your packets in Ordinance 6586. The project is located west of Bismarck, north of Interstate 94, and would be south of, looks like we almost got it, south of Wilderness Cove, and west of River Road, and thanks, Jason, and east of the Missouri River. The project area is comprised of 71.2 acres on one parcel of land. Future land use associated with the proposal is parks and open space, and the existing zoning is a combination of A, agricultural, and RR residential, or rural residential. The Planning and Zoning Commission did consider this request at the July 24th meeting. No members of the public spoke at the hearing, and no written testimony has been provided. At the conclusion of the hearing, the Planning and Zoning Commission did unanimously recommend approval of the zoning map amendment on Auditor's Lot S3, Section 25, Township 138 North, Range 81 West, Hay Creek Township, from A Agricultural to the RR Residential Zoning District, to all be the A Agricultural Zoning District as outlined in Ordinance 6586 in your packets. Any questions that you may have of me?
Any questions? Here's all there are, even. This is a public hearing. Anyone who wishes to speak to this, please come forward. A second call for public comment. A third and final call for public comment. Hearing and seeing no public comment, public comment period is now closed. Commissioner, what are your wishes?
Move to approve.
Second.
Do we have any discussion? Hearing none, we'll call the roll.
Commissioner Connolly?
Yes.
Commissioner Cleary?
Yes.
Commissioner Rish?
Yes.
Commissioner Thinker?
Yes.
Mayor Smith?
Yes. Next item is request commission approval for resale of water of Bismarck MHP LLC water sources contract. Michelle?
Mayor and Commissioners, this item's for your attention tonight is basically if you wanted to allow the resale of water under a water service contract. The ordinance does prohibit resale of water except by arrangement of the Board of City Commissioners. You did hear some information today. I guess I hadn't seen that package that had been presented to you, but you had asked us to check into a few other areas and from previously, and we had the Century Code and basically had some prohibitions on the current rates and what could be increased. This group has addressed that by putting in place new water service contracts and basically had no longer existing contract or the previous contracts that they had with their tenants. We had also been asked to take a look at the meter readings and the usage and how that tracks with our system. And the dates and the reads are different, and it's going to be very difficult for us to correlate between the two to try and match things. And so we're just, there's likely to be differences in read dates and times and the timing of the water usage between the two systems, so it would be very difficult to match them exactly.
Is that because we have a cutoff mid-month and theirs is cutting off end of month, or?
So we are, their system and our system is able to pick dates to take the reads from, but we are taking the date from the main meter that feeds into all their services. So as they're taking water off of the lines that, or the water that's within their lines, there's always going to be some variations for how they're using the water at the edge of the system and then within the system, if that makes sense.
It does. Commissioner Conley, go ahead. I have a thought, but I got a formula.
Our average unit that we go by, because it's units, and it's 748 if I remember,
How many gallons is that approximately?
That is the 748 gallons, is 1 unit, yes.
And then with that, manufactured home parks are, we look at them a little bit differently because the stakeholders being, kind of view them differently than single-family homes, correct?
So when they're individually metered, any property that's individually metered for residential use is single-family. Any residents that have multiple families that have one meter, those are considered in the multifamily rate. And so they are a different rate, they're on the multifamily rate, yes.
Can you explain the difference between the two? And the reason why I bring it up is that we changed it from a five-tier to a four-tier. And we gave to where there's a lower rate for 8 units or less. And the measurement, the average measurement at the stakeholder meetings was based on a 10,000 square foot yard as the average and things. Manufactured home parks, their yards are significantly smaller. And so when we're talking like a $24 increase, then it would be hard to match the calculation. That 24 is above what that 8 unit would be.
Commissioner Zinger. Yeah, Commissioner Conley, I'll answer that question for you. Right, as Michelle said, all individual homes that are metered are considered single family. Multifamily doesn't have a tiered system. They're flat rate. So they're flat. It doesn't matter if they use 100 gallon or 100 units or 2 units, they're charged the same amount per unit. And on this, it's 215, if I remember right, something like that. But I mean, it's important to note too that I did look at some of this data, and there are some of those tenants that do use more water than I use in my single family home, which I would consider a lot. So we've gone back and forth as to when this would come to the commission. I mean, as a portfolio holder, I've sat in on a few of these, and it's finally here to reassess, as we did turn it down in 2023. So I just, a little bit of history for a couple of you, so.
And I appreciate that. I'm asking the question here so it's on tape for the hearing, because there's a lot of people paying attention on this, so.
Yeah.
So I appreciate the comments. Commissioner Zinger.
So I think I can formulate my question. Like, if it is confusing, tell me, please. So mine is around specifically item, I think it's paragraph 9 in the proposed agreement between the city and the park. And it has to do with the audit requirement. And so on a 12-month calendar period, this difference that you said would be difficult to reconcile, do you view that as being material? Like, is it going to be within 1 or 2%, or is it going to be more like 10% difference? That's what, because I'm trying to figure out how do we get to this. Commissioner Zinker.
Yeah, so Mayor, that's a good question, right? What's the delta?
Right.
What comes into our meter, and then what goes into their meters? 88, 90, whatever it is, right? So if we show them using X for gallons, and what goes through their system is Y, what's the delta between the two, or the difference between the two? That's the part where I'm struggling with, because I, unfortunately, those residents, in lieu of calling their tenant, or their landlord, basically, those tenants would call a landlord, they may call the city, and we're not gonna have any answers for them because we don't have information to their system. We don't know when they're gonna read it, what date it is. I've done a little research on those meters, and they can give you continuous, like to the second, I think it's to like within 15 seconds of water going through. I don't think ours are that detailed, but we can at least tell you, hey, if you got a constant flow of water, we can red flag that. Someone's flapper gets stuck on a toilet, All of a sudden you're using 107 gallons of water every hour, that's a red flag, and our staff does a fantastic job of contacting those, our citizens for that. We can't do that with, for them. They can do that, and they've done that. I mean, I've talked to a couple of their staff members, they've done that, but if their tenants don't do anything with it, there's really nothing we can do about it. And that's, I don't know, I understand what they want to do from a business perspective. I just don't know what the unrelated costs are going to be to us as a city and to Michelle's staff answering those questions. It's kind of like opening up Pandora's box. I don't know what's going to happen when we crack the lid, so to speak. So.
And Commissioner, I view that as a legitimate concern, and then further up, I'm going down to how we prove that the rate they're charging their residents isn't different than what we're charging them, and.
Well, that would all, I would think that would.
So I gotta come through this audit, but part of it's going to be, can we trail that back to our readings versus their readings on top of that? And then how much time is that? I realize they have to pay for their service on that part, but it's going to take time on our part to dig through that. It may not be necessarily Michelle, it might be Demetrius' staff.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so Mayor, just to respond to that too, I do know after looking at the data that there is a difference between what we have going in and what goes to there. And they've acknowledged that someplace within their system, they have pipelines losing a little bit of water. Now, it's not gushing water, right? It's not that type of thing, but there is going to be a difference.
A shrinkage.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. So they're, in theory, they're not even really charging for all of the, charging to their tenants all of the water that we're charging them for.
And I'd be comfortable with that.
That's
the easy answer. Yeah. If it's the other direction, it's a different.
There's a problem. Yes, sir. Yep.
I don't know if you raised your hand, Commissioner. Do you have a question?
I might as well get to it and stuff. And within their presentation during public comment, they kind of opened up the discussion themselves too with the 2-year agreement not to raise rents and everything. There's a bit of a history that goes in with this. We saw our first manufactured home park fall to corporate owners in 2017. The affordable rate at that particular park was between $230 a month and $240 a month for lot rent. We just got done with a public health conversation, and when we're talking unexpected costs to the city, the state just came out with a stat last week that our homeless rate has been up 26% in the last 4 years. And right now, a lot of the manufactured home parks, we've had them come across to where they're crossing the barrier of 700. One of them, September 1st, is gonna go to 750. And these are investment companies coming in. They ship their profits out of state, and we're picking up the pieces as a community with our homeless rates, with our addiction rates, with a lot of other things, because people are literally having to choose between having four walls around them for protection, food, water, and medications and such. And since this new portion has come to our city and things, is I haven't found anything that has come across as a fair and equitable thing on behalf of the citizens that live here. And those are the people that we have to answer to. And even after the topic came to us the last time, they increased their rent $40 a month right after they pulled the subject from the table. Now, a lot of these parks, I knocked on every one of those trailers in that park. There's probably five that we would consider pretty decent. And the rest of them have a standard level that we would question. And they're not efficient, and they're going to use. So if we have a margin on meters, and we can only make the decision, but they're offering the rate, is their base rate to where, because they've had meters now for 3 years, to where they can actually back out of the base rate in the rental agreement for 24 months? Now that's on them, we can't ask them to do that. Can they do that base rate, and then only charge the overage to the ones that may be going over? That would make a little more sense to where we could measure it and stuff, but there's just so many things. with the homeless rates going up, and all of those social things cost cities a lot of money. I just have not run across to where it's fair and equitable. They're paying more than market rate for these parks. So any of the HUD programs and things, which will only be grants at true market value, basically the grants aren't any good because they can't pay for the difference to take advantage of them. I'm a no on this, but that's kind of some of the background. I could, there's more information, but I'll stop there.
Commissioners, other questions?
I don't think we should.
Yeah, does anybody have questions of the requester? We already heard from the legal counsel, but.
Mr. Mayor, can we address the points made by the commission?
Sure.
Thank you, Mayor Schmitz and commissioners. Just to address some of the points that were brought up. First of all, the contractual relationship here would be between the park and the city, that there's a main line that the water comes into, so the park would continue to pay the bill. There wouldn't be any contractual relationship in this situation between the tenants and the city. There would be the contractual relationship between the park and the city and the tenant and the city. So any calls to the city, I mean, I agree that would not be appropriate. It wouldn't be something that the city would be able to answer those questions to them outside of there being an annual review that would be provided to the city to show what the numbers are. But as far as there wouldn't be any contractual relationship between the city, so if a tenant is calling and saying, I don't think that this dollar amount is correct, that would be brought up with the landlord, not with the city directly. It was brought up that there is some leakage and that there are common areas that there is water being used. There may be some seepage, so that is absolutely correct, that the total water in is not this is a larger amount than the water that is being metered to the individual residents. And I mean, that's just the way that it's going to be because there are common areas and so forth that water would be used. As far as the timeline, I'm sure that could be sorted out to make sure that syncs up appropriately to be able to provide the city with any information that they would wish to have to make sure that things are being monitored appropriately. As far as Commissioner Connolly, some of the comments made about these parks, I don't disagree that there have been issues in our city with some of the parks, and that's part of the reason that the tenants' rights was enacted with the legislature. As far as this park, we've done the legal work for this park for many years. It's been a stable park. There's been very few evictions. The evictions that have been taking place, they have not been for non-payment. They have been for other related issues with the people that needed to be removed for the benefit of the community. So this has been a stable park. There hasn't been habitual problems with non-payment. And in this situation, if there was non-payment as far, it would be part of the same invoice with the rent that would be on my client than to eat those costs if they weren't paid. And finally, as far as being fair and equitable, if the commission doesn't agree to this, unfortunately, more than likely, there would be a letter sent out to indicate that the commission does not feel it appropriate that you pay by your water usage, so you're going to be footing the bill pro rata for all of the individuals in the community. I don't see how that is more equitable than having personal responsibility for the water used to be able to pay the bill that for the services that you have consumed. Again, there's no other portion of the city as far as residents go where we say, fantastic, your neighbor's using $180 worth of water, you're using 40, great, you can kick in another 20 bucks every month to help subsidize their nice green yard and pool. I don't believe that that's appropriate, and the rents, Commissioner Connolly indicated, the rents here are substantially lower than was brought up there. Unfortunately, they would likely have to be raised at some point. We're not wanting to raise, we want to have that moratorium, give everybody proper notice so they know what their water bill and plan accordingly. But I from doing work for this landlord, It's been a stable park. The payment hasn't been a habitual issue. Rents aren't $750 a month. So I would continue to urge the commission to grant this request. We believe that would be in the best interest of the residents to be able to pay for their own water, opposed to be subsidizing folks that are paying a significantly larger dollar amount.
With all due respect and stuff, I do know what the rents are in your park and things, and I'm choosing not to make it an issue about you specifically and stuff. I could bring out some of the dirty laundry of what I've learned about that park and things. We're talking about the water issue, and so I stated some of the history there. But I'll give you an example. The only remaining privately owned park in the city has double wide trailers with double car garages and bigger lots, and they charge less for rent than this particular park. So when the other gentleman that was here came up to us last time around, he says we want to continue to be the most affordable choice in Bismarck. So why is it that our privately owned park that has more to offer with newer trailers and nicer places charges less in our community? He lives here, he interacts with there. His profits stay in our community. For the corporate companies that are here, those profits go out of our state, and we are picking up a lot of the pieces. We are seeing it in our numbers through our public health. And those are some of the things. I think it's okay that a manufactured home park or anybody else makes money, but we need better answers for our citizens. And unless we get that to where it's more fair and equitable, to where we can address some of those issues, this is more risk on us as a city to say yes. And I do, when I went in there and knocked on all the doors, it was 50-50. That surprised me. I thought I was gonna get all no's. It was 50 on the tenants. And yes, it sounds good, no it doesn't. So that's a plug for what you're asking. At the same time, we are paying a heavy price as a community because since the corporate ownership has entered into our city, there's been some significant consequences to it. And granted, other parks take ownership for what they do, it's there, but the privately owned one here is offering a better option than anybody else in the community, except for two, and that particular park is up for sale.
Commissioner Rich.
Mayor, Commissioner, what is the rent? How much is the lot rent in your park?
It was increased $39 in February. The current rent is $590 per month.
I have a couple of questions. One might be just clarification. So, mentioned common areas. Are the common areas metered?
I don't believe that they're individually metered.
Just the lots. Just the individual lots.
So, again, you're dealing with the accountant here. From an audit perspective, and because this is a particular type of audit, which would require a certification on it, I think that would be a component that would need to be addressed as to how much usage is going there, because I can tell you that I would poke holes, anybody else would too, if I have unmetered water that is not accounted for, and so you're telling me here's what's going to the residents, that number might be lower than what's going through our meter, but how do I know it's really lower if I don't know what's going through to the common areas? The second item is, in paragraph 9, it says the user shall have 90 days following the end of the calendar year to submit the findings to the city finance director. But then the last sentence in that paragraph says, findings must be received no later than April 30th. That seems like a contradiction in dates, because 90 days would be March.
I would agree, Mayor. And
so that might just be a clarification. Commissioner, maybe I'm missing something.
Yeah, Mayor, you're correct. But we never ratified or took a look at that contract back in 23, so we probably didn't clarify some of the stuff. So I just don't want to put all of that on them.
Yeah.
You know?
No, and I just, as I was reading, so I got to put it out there.
And thank you, Commissioner. I believe that this was just a draft put together by the city, that hasn't been fleshed out.
Okay. That's fine.
So if there are other conditions that the commission would like to see, whether it's a meter on common areas, my client, I'm sure, would be more than happy to do so.
Yeah. Well, my mind is working through that. So, Commissioner Conley.
the difference between the privately owned park versus what you're charging is they're $85 a month less. That's significant. Motion to deny.
Second.
Okay, we have a first and a second. We have discussion. What is our discussion? Go ahead, Commissioner.
Well, if we deny this, they're probably gonna raise the rent anyway. The one attractive feature is they'll lock in the rent or pledge to lock in the rent for 2 years. And clearly, sometimes people are irresponsible with water, and I look through all these things and some are a lot higher. I've got a shop with, I use the minimum amount of water every month. Every once in a while, it jumps $15. You know what it is? A leaky toilet. Costs $15 a month, one toilet. So I'm somewhat sympathetic to saying, hey, do what you can to conserve water. But I'm afraid we vote this down and it'll just, they're just gonna raise the rent. What's gonna prohibit them from raising the rent tomorrow?
Nothing prohibits them from raising the rent either way. That's one thing. And if they're already charging more than the only privately owned one that offers 3 times the amount of amenities, we're not gaining anything here. I just, as much as I've followed this since 2017 and seeing the different leases and our sister city, there's some of them there that are illegally charging for water because they've never had approval of the city commission. And there's just a lot of like opening Pandora's box. We don't know where that's gonna get us. I'm willing to say we could negotiate and try to see what that better outcome is, but there hasn't been a lot of promising things in the outcomes and interactions with the corporate ownership, and that's all over the nation, not only our community.
I'm not sure if there's one or more than one private ownership park in town, but I think there is, but I understand your concerns. I'm struggling with some of the dynamics around the contract, but that doesn't mean it's a private business. If they want to raise the rents, they're going to raise the rents, and that might be difficult. We can't control that. We don't have rent control. Commissioners.
So, Mayor and Commissioners, from the perspective of the portfolio holder for this, and we've never done this for anything or anybody, let's take the conversation out of the manufactured homes. Once we allow this, that's going to open it up for other entities to do the same thing. And I don't know how we would regulate that or how we would navigate that, but I mean, we can't just, I'll use it, mess this up, City Attorney Combs. We can't just deny it, whether we like people or not, right? If we approve this, there are gonna be other requests that come. And I put that out there to have conversation. I've already told them no multiple times, but I finally let them come to the commission and ask. So here it is. If 3 votes go one way, so be it. But it doesn't matter, whatever the 3 are, but, or if it's 4-1 or 5-0, whatever we decide, we just gotta understand what's coming down the road, so to speak.
Yeah, Commissioner, I think you brought up a point that I think I tried to think of earlier, but you're right, we have multifamily places all over the city, apartment houses, and they're not individually charged water, typically speaking. They're charged one rate or one bill to the building, and now are we gonna be facing that too?
Mayor and Commissioners, if I own 436 plexes and I had an opportunity to do that, I absolutely would.
Other discussion? So a motion and a second to deny the request. Is that correct? Right? If no other discussion, we'll call roll.
Commissioner Cleary?
Yes.
Commissioner Rish?
Yes.
Commissioner Zenker?
Yes.
Commissioner Conley?
Yes.
Mayor Schmidt?
Yes. Request is denied.
Okay.
Commissioner, oh, we'll pause.